यशोर नंदन ध्वज जनहन्या झामुना धीरा धन माधवा Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Krishna Krishna, Nitya Gaur. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Evo, Hare Rama, Gauranga, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Krishna Krishna, Nitai Gaur, hey, Rambo, Nitai Gaur, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Nithai Gaur Hare Bhav, Hare Bhav, Hare Bhav, Hare Bhav. Nithai Gaur, Nithai Gaur, hey! Nithai Gaur Hare Bhav, Hare Bhav, Hare Bhav, Hare Bhav. Jaya Jaya Prabhu Pad, Prabhu Pad, Prabhu Pad, Jaya Prabhu Pad. Jaya Jaya Prabhu Pad, Prabhu Pad, Prabhu Pad, Jaya Prabhu Pad, Prabhu Pad. Hare 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 Gaur Premanandi, Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bhav, Jayom Vishnupad, Paramahans Parivajakacharya Stotra Sattva Sri Siman. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Raj Granta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Narottam Das Thakur Masayi Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Sri Sri Kishore Kishori Ki Jai, Sri Sri Gornitai Ki Jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai, Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bho. Glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, japa tip for the day. We can always use some hints on how to improve japa. So this one's coming from Satchinandana Maharaj, who really studies japa deeply and has made japa and kirtan his mission in service to Srila Prabhupada and the devotees. And one of the things he points out, and you can see, it actually has a very, what we say, powerful effect, is that when you chant, listen carefully to the first Hare. And that's the entrance into the mantra. Listen very, if you have to focus, try to focus on that first Hare. Emphasize your consciousness or put your consciousness on that Hare. It's both practical and spiritually philosophical. And the spiritual philosophical aspect of it is if you want to approach Krishna, you approach Krishna through Radha. Radha is called Hare. And by hearing that first Hare, the advantages of hearing the rest of the mantras increased. So, practice, try it out. And I found it very helpful. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30. This is the last two verses in the chapter, 50 and 51. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 4, Chapter 30, the chapter is entitled The Activities of the Prachetas, Texts 50 and 51. Yojamana sarve sam. Yojamana sarve sam. Teja teja swinam rucha. Teja teja swinam rucha. Swayopadatta dakshyakcha. Swayopadatta dakshatya. Karmanam daksham abruvan. Karmanam daksham abruvam. Yojamana sarve saham. Chant together, please. Try it again. Yojamana sarvesham. Teja teja swinam rucha. Swayopadatta dakshyatcha. karmanam daksham abruvan. Ladies, yeah, one who Jayamana. Just after his birth, sarve sum of all, teja, the brilliance, tejasvinam, brilliant, rucha, by effulgence, swaya, his, upadatta, covered, dakshyat, from being expert, cha, and, karmanam, in fruit of activities, daksham, daksha, abruvan, was called, tam, him, praja, living beings, sarga, generated, rakshasayam, in the matter of maintaining, anadi, the firstborn, Lord Brahma, abhisicha, having appointed, cha, also, yuyoja, engaged, yuyuja, engaged, anyan, others, cha, and, sa, he, vai, certainly, sarva, all, prajapatin, progenitors of living entities. So, translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. After being born, Daksha, by the super excellence of his bodily luster, covered all other bodily opulences. Because he was very expert in performing furtive activity, he was called by the name Daksha, meaning the very expert. Lord Brahma therefore engaged Daksha in the work of generating living entities and maintaining them. In the course of time, Daksha also engaged other prajapatis, progenitors, in the process of generation and maintenance. Purport. Very small purport, please listen up. Daksha became almost as powerful as Lord Brahma. Consequently, Lord Brahma engaged him in generating population. Daksha was very influential and opulent. In his own turn, Daksha engaged other prajapatis headed by Marichi. In this way, the population of the universe increased. Om Agyantimirandasya Ginajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare So, Daksha. He has a big service, important service. He has known the word Daksha, as Prabhupada would say, Daka, because in Bengali it's pronounced Daka. Prabhupada would say, Daksha, he was expert. And what was he expert at? Producing children. Haribo. So, therefore, he had a very powerful responsibility. He had to, at the beginning of the new manifestation of creation, he had to bring forth living entities. We hear about Daksha's activities later on in the sixth canto in Srimad Bhagavatam, the same Daksha, who got in trouble with Shiva now. He gets in trouble again. And this time with Narada Muni. He produces 10,000 children called the Hayarshvas. And now he tells them, your duty is to go to holy places, purify yourself, and become ready to enter into the Grihastha Ashram. But first, you must do this purification in order to be able to properly execute your duties in the Grihastha Ashram. And so, they go to this holy place. And who do they meet? Narada Muni. And Narada Muni says, you know, he meets them, they offer their obeisances to this very saintly person, and he says, yeah, what do you want to enter Grihastha life for? Stay brahmachari. Why get involved with all this extra, you know, burden? Just, you know, just practice some austerities and penances and engage in devotional service. Why get involved with all that? So Narada, he's powerful. His preaching is very, he preaches to everybody. He preaches to, you know, the topmost and to the most fallen. And so they appreciated what he said, and they gave up their desire, but they gave up the instructions of their father and followed the instructions of Narada. Daksha was angry. I produced these children, 10,000 of them. It's not easy. To maintain one child today is hard. Imagine trying to maintain 10,000. And so he produces another 10,000 called the Salvasas. Salvasas? Yeah. Something like that. And he tells them the same thing. Go to this holy place, purify yourself, get ready to enter the Grihastha Ashram. We could become progenitors also, because we have to populate the universe. So, they do the same thing. They go, Narada Muni Bhajai Vina Radhika Ramana Nahamre. He's singing the glories of the Lord. He sees, and comes Daksha's sons again. Another opportunity to preach. Same thing happens again. They respect this great sage's words and advice. They give up their desire for household life and go to the forests and perform austerities and penances and maintain brahmachari their whole life. Daksha's fried. Oh, he's so angry. He's beyond anger. He can't even speak. He gets so mad he can't even talk. Ever get to that stage? Don't. But it does happen, where you just get so angry you can't even let out the words, you know. And then he produces 10,000 girls, and Narada doesn't do anything. So, and then they enter household life and get married. So, and Daksha, when he sees Narada, the first chance he gets, he just starts chastising Narada Muni. You're supposed to be a saint. And I sent these children perform austerities, and you deter them from their duty. And he starts getting really angry at him. And Narada doesn't say a word. He's just sitting there listening because he knows he can't say anything to Daksha because Daksha will just become more angry. There's no reasoning in. So he just listens. And then he says, you just cause so much problems. Therefore, I curse you that you can't stay in one place for more than 3 days. Narada thought, pretty good curse. Because sometimes really, you know, curses are like benedictions. Just like when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was walking along the banks of the Ganga. And there was one brahmana, kind of a ritualistic brahmana. He was a nice brahmana. He wanted to come into Lord Chaitanya's kirtans during the nocturnal kirtans that Lord Chaitanya had. But those kirtans were only for the most elevated persons in pure Krishna consciousness. Not even some of Lord Chaitanya's associates could go in there unless they were on the highest platform of pure devotional service. So this brahmana, he wanted to come in, but he wasn't allowed. So he became angry. And then he was sitting on the bank of the Ganga and Lord Chaitanya was just walking along. He said, oh, there he is, that Nimai Pandit. Ah, he stopped me, the brahmana. I wanted to come in and also take part in your program. But you wouldn't let me in, therefore I curse you. And my curse is you will never gain material happiness ever in your life. Lord Chaitanya said, wonderful curse. Thank you very much. And then the Brahmin said, what did I say? I don't really know. Lord Chaitanya said, thank you. Don't change anything. Perfect curse. No material happiness ever. And that, of course, led later to Lord Chaitanya taking sannyas. So Daksha, he offends Lord Shiva by getting angry at Shiva because Shiva's not respecting him when he walks into the assembly. Everyone gets up. He's got a beautiful bodily effulgence. As soon as he walks in the room, his bodily effulgence is so prominent that everyone notices it. And they immediately turn their attention to Daksha. What a powerful person. It says here was almost as powerful as Lord Brahma himself, the creator of the universe. Therefore, Brahma gave him such an important service. Generate populations throughout the universe. That's not an easy job. That's a lot of sex life. Difficult, right? And what happens when you have a lot of sex life? You become, what we say, unable to appreciate spiritual people. He couldn't appreciate Shiva. Too much sex life. Couldn't appreciate Narada. Too much sex life. Prabhupada was talking yesterday on the tape. He said, if you really want to make progress in devotional service, then one has to give up sex life completely. He says, but it's not easy. It takes hundreds of births to come to that stage of being completely detached from sex life. Because it's the Adi Ras. What is the Adi Ras? Ras means mellow relationship, and Adi means original. What's our original relationship with Krishna? Love. Pure love. And when that love is transformed or directed towards material energy, it comes out in the form of lust. It's not that we have sex life with Krishna. There's no forget that idea. That's bogus. People think about that. And that's a person's imagination, that's all. But in the spiritual world, love is an energy, it's a drive that connects the soul with Krishna and in a very powerful way. Just sometimes you see in kirtan, devotees go mad. What is that madness? It's the ecstasy of the holy name, which is non-different than Krishna. But when that energy is directed towards the material energy for sense gratification, it's also very powerful. Same energy, misdirected. It's like, you know, how can you say, if you're driving in a car and you're going, you know, 100 miles an hour, but you're going in the wrong direction, you're still going fast, but in the wrong way. So when that spiritual energy, it's just like Prabhupada uses the example of electricity. Now, electricity is neutral. If you put a refrigerator, you plug it in, what do you get? You get cooling from the electrical current. But that same electrical current, when you use a heating device, it produces heat. So the current is neutral. But according to how the device is connected to the current, you get either cooling or heating. But the electricity is the same. So in the same way, this love for Krishna, when it's directed towards the material energy, it turns into lust. And what is that? The highest form of material pleasure is sex life. But also, it is explained that material happiness in the form of sex life causes the most material suffering. There is a proportional ratio that as much as you try to enjoy in this world, the more you enjoy, the more you suffer. Isn't that nice? It's not like material enjoyment is independent of material suffering. When we get material enjoyment, we're planting seeds for material suffering. Because you can't have a coin with just heads. A coin has heads and tails. So material energy is dual. So you see, and the examples are there. Who are the people who suffer the most? You know, abortion. You know, what else is there? Broken families, broken homes, illicit activities. People commit, they kill each other because somebody else went with somebody else's wife or husband. I remember we were driving in the car. It was here in Chicago many years ago. It was early on a Sunday morning. And we were going to one Hindu temple for a visit to give a lecture. And our car broke down. We got a flat tire. So the police came, and they came to help us out. And so I start talking to police. I said, it's Sunday morning, kind of quiet, not much to do, right? You know, kind of like I was making some small talk. He said, no. He said, this is the time of the week we have the most problems. We get all these calls from domestic violence. He says, this is the weekend, especially on the Sundays, husbands and wives are at each other's throat. Domestic violence is the biggest thing. So you see that you get married for love, and what do you get? Haribo. You get something opposite. That's the nature of this material world, because although it appears to be natural, Pumsam Striya Pituni Bhava Metan Tayor Ivar Miharanti Ahur Ato Grihashetra Sutapa Vitar Janasa Moham Yamahama Meti. Rishabdev, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, explains that the attraction for male and female is the basic misconception in this world. And based on this misconception, the hearts of these two living entities are tied together. And due to that hard knot of attachment, what happens? Home, possessions, children, bank balance, on and on and on and on. Material life just expands and expands and expands and expands, all because of one thing, the desire for sex life, which is the basic principle of material energy. Therefore, we have what is called brahmacharya, teaching what is called to give up this desire to enjoy in this way and to take to devotional service. Nayam deho deho bhajam nirloke kastan kama arati vidbhujanje tapo divyam putra kadyena sadvam. Brahma sokam tvanantam. Brahma Sokyam is Tvanantam. What is that? Happiness in material life is unlimited. But what is Rishabdev saying in this verse? That people work hard day and night like dogs and hogs just for a little bit of sense gratification. And what is that sense gratification? Maintaining family and sex life. That's the whole material world. And everyone is working so hard for this, what we say, this little bit of so-called pleasure, which is seen by those who are fixed in devotional service as another form of suffering. But to give it up, you can't. It's too difficult. Why? Because it's that same love for Krishna directed towards the material energy or towards the opposite sex. So it's powerful. It is very powerful. How do you get over that? One has to develop love for Krishna. That's the only way. In the meantime, we have to perform austerities and penances and understand the futility of such things. Daksha, he's expert. He's expert at sex life. And therefore, although he has so much prestige and power and opulence, still he can't appreciate saintly pair persons. He always gets in troubles with the saints because he's still engaged in fruitive activities. And Prabhupada mentions this in the tape, that one cannot really engage properly in devotional service as long as there is a desire to enjoy material happiness in the form of sex life. Look at the statistics. Where's all the problems come? Male and female relationships, right? The whole world, all the problems are based on that. So what do you say? Stop it? No. There's a way to regulate it, and that is called Grihastha Ashram. Grihastha Ashram means that, as is explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, that the purpose to get married is simply to fulfill that desire for material needs, we say a spiritual environment, by following rules and regulations and restricting this desire according to the religious principles. And that is, sex life is only meant for procreation. Now that in ISKCON is also difficult. We have so many problems with that. People get married, they can't follow that regulative principle. Very difficult. Therefore, the power of chanting the holy names and in service to the Vaishnavas gives that higher taste, where one can get overcome that, what he called, that desire to enjoy what we say physical or material pleasure. But it's not pleasure. It's something else. It goes on as pleasure. There's a beautiful, if you really want to hear more about this subject, I was listening to Srila Prabhupada yesterday. He was just going on like a freight train, just smashing this whole idea of sex life. I was just like, whoa, what a lecture. And it was a morning walk conversation, October 18th, 1975. Yeah, October 18th, 1975 in Johannesburg, South Africa. You know that one, yeah. Yeah, I just happened to come across it yesterday. And the thing is, it's not like we're putting down male and female relationships. We have to understand, as Rishabhdev say, this is unnatural. A real relationship is with Krishna. Krishna is the ultimate principle of happiness and the ultimate principle that gives relationships meaning. When we're connected to Krishna, we're also connected to all other living entities in the proper way. Not by exploitation, but by service. By serving Krishna, then we serve each other in a way that is beneficial to the person we are serving. That's the mood. So a devotee sees himself as servant of others. Sex life means to exploit someone else for your own pleasure. That's what it is. It's a form of exploitation of another. Sometimes you think, wow, that would be nice. But then you think, what will it mean to that person? You're trying to you're enjoying in your mind with that idea of enjoying with that person. But what will happen to that person? Will it be beneficial for that person? We don't even think like that because it's a selfish desire. So to get over that, one has to very seriously execute devotional service. Of course, we also get burnt out by experience. When we have bad experiences in the material world, in these, what we say, relationships, we start to understand a little bit about the reality. Because Krishna explains, the Shastras explain, that these activities are simply leading to suffering. We don't believe it, though. We do believe it, but we can't help it. As Krishna, as Arjuna said to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, what forces a person to act against their will, even they know it's wrong? And Krishna immediately answered, the greatest sin, viharvayinam. And Krishna is saying that this lust, when it comes in contact with the material mode of passion, it later turns into anger, and it's the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. And then Krishna explains, where does this lust exist? In the mind, the senses, and in the intelligence. And then he goes on to explain there's different degrees of lust. Just like an embryo is covered by the womb, dust is covered by, a mirror is covered by dust, and the fire is covered by smoke. So different levels, but still it exists in one form or another. And how to get over that, and Krishna explains, by engaging in cultivation, spiritual knowledge, and regulating the senses. Detach oneself from material activities through the cultivation of spiritual knowledge and regulate the senses in devotional service. Regulated life is the way to overcome the desire to enjoy sense gratification. We still have the desire to enjoy it, so we regulate it. Okay. So at regular times we eat, at regular times we sleep. Just like in sex life, in married life, there's a time where the man and woman can have sex in order to bring about, when we say, children. There's a time of the month which is the most opportune time for pregnancy to develop. And one follows that. And if the pregnancy doesn't develop at that time, then they wait another month and go at that same time again. It's not like when it's not opportune, then you can have sex life because, and it's the safe time. Sometimes that falls too. But then it's explained that actually at a certain, and Prabhupada explains that at that time. He actually gives the details. So if we follow these processes and engage in devotional service, we can detach ourselves to material sense gratification, which is the cause of all suffering. Even a little bit of sense gratification, if it's not what we say, ultimately dealt with in a proper way, will lead to more and more desires for sense gratification. So the process of devotional service is not to somehow or other maintain a little bit of material sense gratification along with Krishna consciousness, because it's like trying to cross a river with a foot in each boat. You can't. You're going to be pulled apart, and you're going to have to go from one boat to another eventually. So stay in the boat of that boat that takes you over the ocean of material suffering. And the captain is Srila Prabhupada. The favorable winds are devotional service. And the row, the motion is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And if we always chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra or cultivate the mood of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we'll always be in the safest possible position. And it's easy. Prabhupada said, the mind, you have to engage the mind in doing something. So therefore he said, think of Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, when he explains what is the process of devotional service, he says, manmana bhavamad bhakta, always think of me. He doesn't say, think of me when you get some time, or think of me when you're in the temple. He says, always think of me. So we take darshan of the beautiful form of Kishore, Sri Sri Gornitai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani, and we print that form in our mind throughout the day, and we can remember that form. And remember that form, we're with Krishna through the power of remembrance. The holy name, remembering the transcendental form, remembering the philosophy, Sometimes we like to remember the philosophy. That is also absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And remembering the instructions of the spiritual master. Serving the Vaishnavas. These are all ways to keep the mind completely engaged in devotional service. Because devotional service is the natural constitutional position of the living entity. Daksha here, he's got a, we may say he has a very responsible position. He has to produce thousands and thousands of children, and he has to produce other persons who can do the same thing. Big responsibility. But you see, it's not an easy service, but at the same time, he has a tendency to get proud. That's the nature of anything that has to do with fruit of activities. Fruit of activities bring a certain desirable result, which causes one to be somewhat proud. And he's got a lot to be proud about. But pride causes one to commit offenses. And he committed offenses against Narada, committed offenses against... he also committed offenses against Brahma, too. Brahma was very patient in dealing with him. He committed offenses against his daughter, Sati. She got so mad at her father, she just burnt up her body. She said, because this body was given to me by you, you rascal, I don't want anything to do with you, so I'm going to get rid of this body also. So she sat in mystic trance and accessed the fire in her body through the power of the pranayama system and burnt up her whole body right in the middle of the assembly. Everybody saw it. And Daksha, you know, after that happened, he didn't think much of it. He didn't get all worried about it. Oh, my daughter burned up. He just thought, oh, I'm... Imagine, you know, your daughter just is on fire and you're thinking, you know, I got 15 other daughters, so I'm not worried about it. We lose one, 15 down, one to 15 still going. Because he had 16 daughters. She was the 13th of the 16th. So this is material pride, you know. Me is the center. So, okay, so we want to get that higher taste in devotional service. It comes by giving up the desire for sex life, sense gratification, yes.
Teaches in the first canto, second chapter, I think verse number 17, that it's not astonishing that even stalwart devotees have fallen down to women and money.
Yeah.
So we shall not find fault when it happens because it's not astonishing.
No.
One should not be astonished.
But my question should be astonished when somebody makes it.
Yeah.
Really.
My question is, especially in the society of devotees, ISKCON, when we hear about devotees having difficulties with this problem, one can get discouraged because we ourselves will be struggling with so many material desires, also the desire for sexual enjoyment. And when we see many stalwart senior devotees also maybe leaving their position and so on due to the sex desire, it can be very discouraging, and one can take like a blow to his devotional service. Like, why should I even try and so on? So
because when they see others, yeah.
You see, not just others, but like the senior persons who are very respectful.
Yeah, and some people also say, just see, get real. You can't do it.
Yeah,
look what happened to him.
Exactly. So how do we remain enthusiastic to pursue the Lord?
See, that follow those persons that are still fixed up. You can look at the failures, but you can also look at the successes too. Why not look at the successes and take inspiration from them and get association from them and also hear from them? And there's a lot of successes also. So... and we see even sometimes successes don't necessarily come with from the category of sannyasis. We see some women who are very, very powerful and celibate in Krishna consciousness. They're doing amazing service. And they're inspiring other devotees in the same way. So it's not relegated to men. Even women are also renouncing this desire for that type of enjoyment. Because they somehow or other, they know. It just leads to suffering. So we can get inspiration from those who take sick. And don't listen to those persons who, because they can't do it, they want to bring you along with them. Yeah. They're saying, get real. I remember one devotee said to me, when devotees come to our Krishna Consciousness Society, we shouldn't train them in brahmacharya, we should train them in household life. But that's against the principles. The first training is brahmacharya, because even if you enter into grihastha life, you have to have the foundation to practice grihastha life in a somewhat a detached way. If you don't, when you enter into that ashram, you also will find difficulties maintaining the vows of grihastha life. Therefore, the training in the beginning is education and renunciation. And therefore, brahmacharya, brahmacharini teaches that. And then when you do, if you do decide to enter grihastha life, you're more equipped to deal with the attractions and the aversions of that ashram. So, yeah, we need this training in the beginning. Sometimes we call it bhakta ashram. Yes, Mataji, what is your name? Alyssa? Mm-hmm. Okay. We need to give her the microphone.
So, if the highest goal is to remain celibate,
the
highest goal is to remain completely celibate, why is it that so many of our founder acharyas were in grihastha ashram?
I missed a few words.
If the highest goal is to remain completely celibate,
Highest goal is
to remain completely celibate. Why is it that so many of our founder acharyas were in the grihastha ashram?
Why are there so many?
So many of our acharyas.
Acharyas in the high. Well, there's celibacy in grihastha ashram too. Celibacy is for the all four ashrams. To be celibate in grihastha ashram means to follow the principles of regulated sex life. I remember I was going to do a brahmachari conference a few years ago, 2008, and I advertised it as a conference for celibacy. And I got all these women, they wanted to come, and they say, we're celibate too. We're married, but we're celibate. Then I realized I titled it wrong, because celibacy, it was my fault, but celibacy is in all four ashrams. So Prabhupada actually said that a grihastha who follows the religious principles is as good as a sannyasi. As good as a sannyasi. He also called it grihastha brahmachari. But it's difficult because you're right there and the attraction is constantly with you. So you have to be strong in your practice of spiritual life. That's why the training in brahmachari life is foundational to enter into grihastha life. Same with the brain training in brahmacharini life. To get a little bit detached from these things. Not like, okay, I can't wait till I get to my training is over so I can get into grihastha life and then I can really enjoy. Haribol. It's not like that. You have to realize that it's an austerity in any of the ashrams. So celibacy is there in all four ashrams. Yes.
Also, that grihastha should behave in a particular way, just like a brahmachari. Can you explain that thing again to clarify?
A little slower, please. I'm kind of old, so I don't hear so good.
Sorry. Maharaj, once Prabhupada explained the dharma for the grihastha ashram also, that how he should behave as a brahmachari, how he should live. He used some specific sentences and words. Can you?
How we should behave in grihastha ashram?
Yeah, also.
Yeah, you should see your wife as Krishna's servant. And you should serve your wife as though you were serving Krishna by serving your wife in that same way. She's part and parcel of Krishna, just like your children are also part and parcel of Krishna. You might say they're your children, but how long will they be your children? They belong to Krishna eternally because they're spirit souls, not simply your children or your wife. These things we adopt according to our relationships in this world, but they're temporary. So if you want to have the proper vision, you see your wife or your children as opportunities to engage in devotional service. And by serving them nicely, you're also serving Krishna properly. So what is that nice service? By providing what they need according to religious principles. So there's a book. I just gave a seminar on it. It was the toughest seminar I ever gave. It was in the Croatian camp at the end of June this year. It's called The Four Goals of Family Life. It was written by Jagannath Ishwari. She's my god sister from London. And she goes through all of Prabhupada's writings and explains artha, dhamma, kama, and moksha in a very, very, let me say, philosophical, systematic way, using Prabhupada's books. It's really, really fundamental for grihastha life, for grihasthas to read this book. I gave that seminar. I had to study that book. I really studied it. And I presented it to the devotees, and I got a lot of nice feedback. The devotees were really thanking me. We need to hear this stuff. So if you get a chance to read the book, it's called The Four Goals of Family Life. It's not about sense gratification. It's about re-regulating our desires in such a way that we can fulfill our desires and move on towards the goal of life, which is Prema Pumartha Mahan, which is the fifth goal of life, love of God, and the ultimate goal of life. So unless we know what is available in Prabhupada's teachings and his books, and through the lives of devotees who are practicing in this ashram, we will fall into the trap of speculation. And speculation always leads to what we say, wrong decisions. Human life means restriction. And you restrict what? You restrict the lower nature in order for the higher nature to reveal itself. If we allow the lower nature as much freedom as the higher nature, then it'll overcome the higher nature. Because the lower nature is stronger because we have been associated with the lower nature for many millions of births in this material world. Yeah. So get that book. It's really good. Four Goals of Family Life. Other questions? Yes. Huh? Internet question, yes. Uh-huh. Thank you.
This is a question from Carlos Camargo. And the question is are there any formulas different than the ones one knows, chanting prasadam, hearing and reading about Krishna with pure devotees, etc., etc., to transform our material desires into a higher love? And then he also asks, and when we project, can we project or canalize our lust or the physical love for a woman or the woman we love into a more spiritual love, to devote it in concert to Krishna?
I think I know what the question is. Love means two things. Prabhupada explained, what does love mean? Love means cooperation. Love means to serve. That's love. You love someone, you serve them. Well, how do you serve them? For what? For their benefit, not serve them for your benefit. So in grihastha life, you serve your wife, that's a way to show love for your wife or your husband. Now, how do you serve according to religious principles? And Prabhupada says you give your wife three things: nice food, nice clothes, nice jewelry. That's the duty of a husband. Not that I have a wife and, you know, honey bone. you know, don't give her any presents. That's showing some affection, showing love. Sex life is not love. Some people think sex and love is the same thing. It is not. Love is actually an emotion that comes with a desire to please another person. When we want to satisfy our senses in relationship to someone else, that is defined as in the Shastras as lust. When I become the center, then I use you to fulfill my needs and I say I love you. But it's not love, it's lust. Love means what's beneficial for that. So, okay, so if there's children that need it, follow the principles for having children. That's all. And you can also have children like that. I remember there's two grihasthas. They were man and woman. They were just living their whole life as grihastha life. And then now they became friends. So after a while, living in grihastha life, your wife becomes one of your friends, your best friend, your husband also. You become like friends to each other. You help each other in devotional service. The physical part ends with the, you know, creation of children. That's all. If you continue with that, then you'll get more and more entangled in material consciousness and you can't really practice devotional service properly. The mind is too disturbed because that desire pushes one away from spiritual practice like that. So, read the Bhagavatam. If you want to read a section of the Bhagavatam, third canto, 31st chapter, verse 31 to 42, it tells you about the pitfalls of sex life. And pitfalls, there are many. So many problems come from that. Why? Because it's the highest form of material enjoyment, causes the highest form of material suffering also. Okay, any other questions? I saw some more hands up here, yes. I hope I answered the question to our caller.
Thank you, Maharaj. I was just considering how in the early days of the movement, we observed the emphasis was everyone living in the temple, and we see probably the majority being brahmacharis or brahmacharinis. And I heard a statement recently that Prabhupada had once indicated that at some point it will more be the focus of the temple and a lot of communities around it, family. Mm-hmm. So I kind of am curious how you see the progression of our movement as far as like receiving brahmachari training and the emphasis on that, whereas we see some centers actually are emphasizing, like you indicated, sometimes there's a push for a grihastha training. So the importance...
Yeah, that should be there also. Yeah. How do we see the movement going? We see that each home should be a temple. That was Prabhupada's desire. He said all the grihasthas who live outside should have deities. And he says if grihasthas don't worship their deities, their falling down in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. That's the words. It's in the 7th canto, 5th chapter, verses 23 and 24. Prahlad Maharaj's prayers to his schoolmates were... No, the prayer before that. Prahlad Maharaj's statement about the 9 process of devotional service. The grihasthas should keep deities. Of course, they should do it under supervision and guidance from spiritual master. But worshiping the deity at home, calling devotees to come to their home, offering prasadam, having kirtan, speaking about Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. We want every house to be a temple. The temple is here, the temple is important, but not everybody can always come to the temple. Like that. So the majority of the movement, which is in proportion to the way the world is organized, will be married. 85-90% will be grihasthas. And that's fine. And they make up the bulk of the society. But still, we need brahmacharis. Why? to go out and to do the preaching on the streets. Go out on the streets, do sankirtan, do book distribution, to show the austerity. We need to also show how, for those persons who have that tendency, that here we have the environment where that mood can be properly taught and cultivated in the temple. So very few will become brahmacharis. Most persons will get married, but that's fine as long as they follow grihastha. And it's difficult. So you, under the guidance of supervision, one can cultivate their Krishna consciousness accordingly. Practice brahmacharya at the beginning, and then if the tendency is that you feel you need to get married, then take guidance from the spiritual master and enter into the ashram graciously. Not like you fall out of brahmacharya and you fall into grihastha life, and then you'll fall out of that too. When you fall once, you just keep falling. It's not like that. It's like they say, well, I can't make it in brahmacharya, I'll make it in grihastha. No. It's not like one is a substitute for another. It's not like that. Is that your training in brahmacharya is meant to help you develop some detachment, so when you do enter grihastha life, if that's your desire, then you'll be equipped not to become a grihamedi. Grihamedi means janasa moham yamamaham mameti. This is my wife, this is my house, this is my car, this is my possession, this is my, mine. I and mine. Who said it was yours? You did. That's the only one who believes it. It's not yours. You're given that position so you can serve in that ashram and make progress. But who are you? You are Jivar Sarupai. You're Krishna's part and parcel eternally. So you play these roles. Grihastha is a role. Sannyasa is a role. Guru is a role. What's our real role? It's eternal servant of Krishna. That's our only identity. There's no other identity. And there's no other role. When we identify with these other roles, we become what we say, we act in such a way that we think this is me, or this is where my happiness lies. So yeah, majority of the people will become grihasthas and few will remain in the celibate. But we need both in order for the society to go on. Yes, you had a question? Yeah.
Hi, Maharaj. Thank you for class. It was nice hearing from you. The last time I heard you was in ISKCON, Connecticut years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. My question is, Prabhupada is such an exalted devotee. He achieved so much. He said to be a pure devotee, but we forget about Prabhupada's past before he became so exalted, and we all knew about him with his wife and his children, and there must be grandchildren. Was his wife instrumental in helping him achieve? Did she have any part in it? Where is his family in all of this?
Prabhupada's past? Prabhupada's a nitya siddha. Nitya siddha means eternally liberated soul. Although he had this material life, you can't identify it the same as everyone else in material life. That was the culture, to get married like that. So he did. But it wasn't like he was attached to it. His wife was very instrumental in helping him become detached from it. Should I tell the story? The story is that, you know, his wife was very, you know, the British imported so many nice things into India. One was tea drinking. So the Indians very much became accustomed to drinking tea at a regular time. I think 4 o'clock in the afternoon was tea time, right? So they also started to have what they call tea biscuits. So she used to buy tea biscuits. So one time she traded Prabhupada's Bhagavatam for tea biscuits. And he was really upset. So, you know, life went on. But at one point, he told her, you know, you got to stop drinking tea. And he was kind of really emphasizing it. And she said, you know, she was just smiling. And then Prabhupada finally said, it's either tea or me. And she said, I'll take tea. And right after that, he left. tea or me. So, you know, it's kind of a little play on words there. But ultimately, don't see... Next week, I'm giving a seminar on the life of Srila Prabhupada. And part of the seminar is to show that Srila Prabhupada's, you know, work in this world is predicted not only by the acharyas, but by Krishna himself. Prabhupada was destined to come and do this work. It's not like he just got lucky. He came with a mission. He's a nitya siddha. He was never materially contaminated, nor could he ever become materially contaminated. He played a role as a grihastha. It also can show you that even a grihastha, he had few children, can also be fully Krishna conscious. We take examples. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of the greatest acharyas in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, wrote over 100 books and periodicals on devotional service, found Lord Chaitanya's birthplace, and reset Lord Chaitanya's mission in the right direction. He had 10 children. So what does that say? That means there's no restriction on what can one do in devotional service in any of the ashrams. And sometimes we see a person may not be able to function so well in brahmacharya ashram, then they get into grihastha ashram, and they start doing nice service and become exemplary as an example for others also. So to see Prabhupada is less pure because of the grihastha ashram is not to see him properly. Yes. Janaki Nath.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Just a quick clarification. It was mentioned Daksha was engaged in a lot of sex life because
It
was a service. So my question is that because it was a service, he was doing it as a service to procreate, but he wasn't engaging in it to gratify his senses. So my question is, even though he engaged in a lot of sex life, how is it that he still couldn't appreciate spiritual people?
That's like the nature of sex life. Even if you do it as a service. It's a problem. You're bound to be affected in some way or another. Yeah, it's just like I'll be a pure devotee in sex life. No. You have to give it up at one point. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for
Hare Krishna.
Beautiful class, Hare Krishna, Maharaj. I was just noticing, like in one of Prabhupada's lectures, he says, anyone that participates in this movement is considered nitya siddha.
No, who said that?
Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.
No, he didn't say that.
He says that three types of...
Nitya bhada, nitya siddha.
He says one type
Kripa siddha.
One type of living...
Nitya siddha means eternally liberated souls who never come to the material world. And if they do come to the material world, they come with a mission. So nitya bhada is the conditioned soul who comes to devotional service. He can be nitya bhada. That means eternally conditioned, but he can also retain his spiritual position again after practicing pure devotional service. Not everybody in Krishna consciousness is nitya siddha. That's not correct. Then you start walking around saying, I'm nitya siddha, you know. Just worship me.
Prabhupada's, unless I'm hearing incorrectly, maybe I heard incorrectly. But
maybe you heard, but maybe you didn't understood the context. Prabhupada also said, all of my devotees are pure devotees. He said that. Because they've given up material life to engage in devotional service. But Nitya Siddha, Prabhupada explains that very clearly, both in his lectures and in his writings, that there are three kinds of living entities. The majority of the living entities are Nitya Bhattas, eternally conditioned. But what does eternally conditioned mean? That's explained by the Acharyas also. That no one can be eternally conditioned, but the association with the material energy for so many millions of lifetimes makes it so difficult for the conditioned soul to understand their eternal relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. Therefore, it appears that they have been eternally conditioned. So the label is given, but ultimately what it means is that you can't trace out your time when you came to the material world. That's what it means. So we're generally Nitya Bhattas, conditioned souls, who are trying to come back to pure devotional service.
Can I get the lecture and then review it? Because that's not what I heard. I could be incorrect.
Okay, we can discuss that.
He says, thank you.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Kishore Kishore ki jai.